Hello and welcome. You are listening to the Cosmic Laundry Podcast, a place where we explore modern spirituality in all of its forms. I'm your host, Giselle Plamondon, and I'm here to guide you on your journey into learning more about your soul's path. I am a social worker, astrologer, and human design guide, and I love to share new ideas, new information, and deeper wisdom with you all, especially as I'm on this path and learning everything with you by your side. So join me every Friday as I open space and explore topics and ideas that will support you in understanding yourself and the world better. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. So today is International Women's Day, and this creeps up on me every single year. Like every year, I'm like, wait, how is this International Women's Day already? I'm not very good at keeping up with these things. So I thought that I would do a little last minute episode. I swapped out the episode that was supposed to come out this week. It'll come out next week instead. And today we're going to talk about, 13 things. I was like, okay, what are we going to do? How do we like commemorate this? And I figured let's do 13 things that I wish I had known at 21. So a huge focus of the Cosmic Laundry and where it started was I started to share as I started my own healing journey and as I started becoming the woman that I wanted to be. I always had this vision in my head of the type of woman I wanted to be, even from a young age. I remember being a teenager and in my early 20s and having this vision of, I guess, my higher self is probably who that was. And I had no idea how to become her. I had no idea how to work through some of my own blocks and traumas and certain things that were holding me back from being that version of myself. And so when I started to do my own healing work, I began sharing some of that. I started to share a lot of what I was seeing in working with women in my practice as a therapist at that time. And then over time, what happened was I discovered that astrology and human design gave me a language or a lens that allowed me to deeply, deeply love myself. And that was the missing piece. 16-year-old me, 20-year-old me, she didn't really love herself. There were parts of herself that she loved for sure. And ironically, I think I was actually pretty confident at that age. I had this vision of who I was going to become, but it wasn't embodied and it wasn't integrated. So I could present as this highly confident being, but it was shaky, there wasn't really, it wasn't integrated. And so astrology and human design really helped me to come to terms, I think, with some of the flaws that I have and the areas of my life and my being where I'm not perfect. And they really helped me to accept myself. And I think that was a huge, huge key for my healing, which is why the Cosmic Laundry exists, is so that I can, help create that shift or that change for other people. But there also were a lot of other lessons along the way that have very little to do with astrology and human design. I studied a lot of relationship psychology, a lot about, there was a good 3-4 year period where I really wanted to understand women and our function in terms of like our biology and how our brains are different. And I learned all about the menstrual cycle and the infradian rhythm and all of these different things, because I also wanted to understand how my biology and body was different from men's. There's a lot of other learning that I have done on this healing journey. And so today, I'm going to share with you guys, sorry for the big yawn. I'm going to share with you guys 13 things that I wish my 21-year-old self knew. I'm also in my luteal phase today, so this might be a bit spicy. Like, I normally do not record podcasts at this phase of my cycle because I'm a lot sassier and a little bit more blunt, and yeah, I communicate, I guess, in a different way than I do the rest of the month. So just a little FYI. Okay, let's just get into it. So I wrote down 13 things. We'll see if it shifts. You guys know me. Sometimes halfway through it, I go off on a totally different tangent. So I don't know. We'll see where this goes. But the first thing that I wish my 21-year-old self had known was how important it is to listen to your intuition as a woman. I think that we are taught not to listen to that because it is so intangible and it's very hard to put words to it, right? We all know that moment where you're like, I know that this is the correct decision for me, or I know that this is happening, or I know that this person is good for me, or this person is bad for me. And there's no like tangible, material, logical reason for why. And I think because a woman's intuition can be so mysterious and hard to pin down, and it doesn't really always make sense, I think that we have been taught to just not listen to it, to put that voice on the back burner, and to prioritize logic over that. But as I've gotten older and as I've started to listen to that voice, I've realized that that intuition, whether that comes from, I do genuinely believe that women have a more powerful relationship with spirit or with God than men do. Not to say that they also don't have that, but we are like the portals that new life come through. There's something really special about being given that ability and being tasked with that, I think. And I think that that does create a deeper connection with spirit. There is that, what is that saying of like, men have to go to the mountains and sit in silence to talk to God, and like women can talk to God while doing the dishes. It's a very different way of connecting with spirit, right? And so whether it's, you know, intuition that comes from that connection to spirit, or maybe it's just that we have, you know, better instincts because we're maybe a little bit more vulnerable. Whatever it is that creates it, I have learned that listening to your intuition will save you a lot of time and energy. And your intuition is always guiding you towards what is best for you. And this is especially true, actually, if in human design you have a defined spleen. This is especially true for you. So yeah, I think learning how to listen to your intuition, learning how to trust it, not seeing it as this like thing that can't be relied on, but understanding that something is allowing you to know things that you shouldn't know, and that knowing is your, it's like your gift as a woman. It is the thing that allows us to take very good care of ourselves, but also of the people in our lives, right? We've all had those moments where you wake up in the morning and you kind of just get the sense of, oh my God, I need to call my mom, or I need to call my brother, or I need to call somebody. I have a feeling that they need me, right? And you call them and they do. There's something really profound in that. And I think that the whole world, everybody benefits when women start listening to that intuitive guidance and knowing. Okay, the second one, your body will tell you when something isn't for you, and it will also tell you when something is for you. So I think we're often taught to override the body, right? Similar to overriding the intuition. And I would say that the more we connect to our body and the more we trust our body and the more we listen to our body, I think our intuition also gets stronger. There's a tie there. But your body will let you know when someone or something isn't for you, right? If you go on a first date with a guy and you are super, super anxious, you can't calm down, your like mind is spiraling, like that is probably not your man, right? I'm definitely not in the camp of thinking that butterflies are always bad. I love a little like butterfly moment, but there's a big, big difference between someone giving you butterflies in the sense of making you feel excited, making you feel alive, right? Making you feel happy and just like, yeah, excited. There's a very, very big difference between that and someone making you feel anxious. And if someone, even if it's not a romantic someone, but if someone is triggering an anxiety response in you, there's just something about the way that your energy or your personality interacts with their personality that just makes you guys not a fit. And it's a danger signal, right? So that's one way where your body will tell you. And when you learn how to listen to that, I've recognized that for me, the secret, especially in relationships, for how I know if a man is going to be good for me, is that he'll give me butterflies. Like I still think that like passion and excitement is important in relationship, especially if you want to like have a good sex life and if those things are important to you, which they're very important to me. But on top of that, a person who is correct for you is going to also bring you a sense of calm. They're going to bring you a sense of like, okay, I can let my guard down here. I don't have to have everything all figured out. Like I'm safe. They'll make you feel, you know, safe. And that's just energy speaking to energy, right? The other piece, and this might be a little, well, maybe not TMI, but if you are hooking up with someone and you're getting like bladder infections and UTIs and things like that, I also firmly, firmly believe like if it's happening chronically and there's no other reason for it and this isn't a reoccurring issue that you have with partners all of the time or just in your life, because that's a thing too. But if this is like specific to this person that you are dating and you've never really experienced this before, I also genuinely believe that that is your body telling you that that person is not a good fit for you. They're just not, yeah, there's just something about the two of you and the way that your energies mesh that is not compatible. Another way that your body will speak to you is like, if you're in an environment and you feel kind of similar to what I was talking about with dating, where if you're feeling really anxious going into work all the time, or if you have this one friend where whenever you're around her, whenever you leave her, like you just feel super drained and tired and like you need to go have a nap, like the things that are correct for you are going to make you mentally feel good and they're also going to make you physically feel good. There's going to be a sense of pleasure and aliveness and energy and vitality when you're interacting with them. And so if you can start to pay attention to that, especially too for generators and manifesting generators, you don't have to do the mental work of figuring out, doing the pros and cons, like all of that thing or all of that stuff. If you just listen to your body will tell you a lot. Your body will speak to you and she's always trying to guide you. The third point is, I know this sounds like cliche and cheesy and everybody says this, but it really is important that you just be yourself. Okay. A lot of people, I did this in my 20s, definitely in my early 20s, where I looked at the people around me or even just like people online that had the life that I wanted, had the certain things that I wanted. And I thought that they had those things because of the very specific things that they were doing. So I thought, oh, if I'm more like this and if I'm more like that, then I will get those things. But the reality is that they got those things because they were being themselves. It wasn't actually about the certain personality traits or decisions they've made. It was because of the willingness and I guess the courage to be themselves. So something that I've learned is that if you are trying to be anybody else other than yourself, you are not going to be able to align with the things that are correct for you. You won't be able to find the correct partner or the correct friends or the work environment that feels good or even like the city that feels good. Like you have to be yourself, even if there really aren't models around you for who that is or what that looks like. And if there are parts of you that you're trying to suppress or hold down because you don't understand how they fit into the landscape of your life, you have to figure out how to bring all parts of you to the table, right? I remember being, you know, young and knowing that I wanted to have a meaningful career, like knowing that I wanted to have meaningful work, knowing that I really, really wanted to help people. And I also always knew that I wanted to have work that felt exciting and like part of my soul's mission or path. I didn't want like a regular 9-to-5. And I remember like looking at all of the people online and whatever that had similar jobs to what I saw myself doing. And they all had this very selfless, martyr-like energy to them. They were workaholics, typically, very girl bossy. They sacrificed everything for their careers. And I really struggled with that because I also knew that as important as it felt for me to have a meaningful career and have meaningful work and to do good things in the world, I also knew that I didn't want my whole life to be work. And I also knew that I'm not necessarily the most like girl bossy, super productive. I'm not going to get up and work 17 hours a day. Like that's just not the way that I operate. And I tried very hard as a young woman to do things the way that other people do them. And I kept hitting, you know, dead ends and walls because I wasn't doing them the way I do them. And it wasn't until I kind of started to look at how do I just want to feel each day and who do I want to be and how do I want to show up that things started arranging themselves for me. It was when I let go of this idea that in order to be successful in career or in relationships or in, you know, whatever, that I had to do things the way other people did them. That was also when I stopped listening to coaches, actually, which is ironic. There's a lot of coaches out there that will tell you, if you follow this formula, you do A, B, C, and D, you will get this result. And it's true, you probably will get that result, but the result will not feel fulfilling. It will not feel... Okay, I just watched a movie, actually, that reminds me of this. What was it called? I think it's called The Game or something with... Oh my gosh, what is her name? Gina Rodriguez, maybe? Wait, I'm gonna pause. Okay, it's called Players. And yes, Gina Rodriguez is the star of it. And essentially this whole movie is about how she meets this guy. She really, really wants to date him. Her and her friends, who are all men, she's kind of like this cool girl that's in the center of all these men in this like very male-dominated industry and life. They set out to kind of like catch him. Like they run a game. They play a game. And so eventually she does start dating this guy. They have a long-term relationship. She's basically living with him, all of these different things. And she is just... still not really happy. Like she's having to pretend to be something that she's not. She has all of the things that she thought she wanted and it's kind of lacking, right? And then at the end, of course, I'm not going to tell you the end just in case you want to go watch it. But the moral of the story is that her just being herself gets her that end result of like the type of love that she desired. And so sometimes I find we get so focused on this goal. This is a very masculine thing that we all do, where we look at this goal. We see this mountain in the distance and we think that climbing that mountain is what's going to make us happy. But usually, if you go inward instead, you'll find different mountains pop up. I don't know if this is going to make sense to you, but it's like making sense in my mind. You'll find that different things pop up that are much more aligned than that mountain that you thought you wanted to climb. And the only way that those things come into your line of vision is if you have the courage to be yourself and to think about what you truly want and to quiet out the outside noise, right? You can follow a formula and you can get everything that you thought you ever desired, but that doesn't mean that you're going to be happy. The only way you're going to be happy is if you are being true to yourself, which is, you know, cheesy, but it's true. Okay, so the next one, this was really, really huge for me, and I think it's really important that all women do this, is that we need to recognize that we are not just, like Alison Armstrong says this all the time, we are not small men. We are not small, tiny men. We don't have the same brains as men. We don't have the same, you know, hormones as men. We don't even operate the same way as men. Like, women have our strengths and men have their strengths, and the whole world benefits when we play to those strengths instead of trying to be like one another, right? And so when I started to learn about how I am different, right? I mentioned this in the intro to this podcast about how I'm different, how a woman's body and energy operates, what makes us unique, what makes us different. And when I started to realize how much of our modern current society is just not really set up for us, right? And that we have to learn how to advocate for ourselves. And also to, I think sometimes this can create a like, fuck men mentality of like, oh, everything was created for you, da 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 da. I don't think that's helpful either. I think it's important to understand that just as we don't know what it's like to be in a male body, we don't know what it's like to have male hormones and a male brain. Like, they don't know what it's like to be us either. And I think that some of the challenge between the sexes comes from thinking that we are the same when we're not really. There's definitely similarities for sure. And I think where we are the same is that we all want love. We all want to feel safe. We all want to feel respected and valued and heard. But the way that we go about feeling those things or experiencing those things is so different. And so when I learned to value the ways that I am different from the men in my life, it allowed me to not only feel better about myself, but it also allowed me to have a lot of respect actually for the people in my life who are different from me, from men especially. There were a few books that I read that really helped me with this. One was Moody Bitches. That book is really about birth control and our hormones and how certain things impact us. And that was a really big life-changing book for me. I haven't read it since my early 20s, so I don't know if like current me would love it. You know how sometimes you go back and you reread something that was super life-changing, super impactful, and you're like, oh yeah, this is okay now. So I don't know how I would feel about it now, but that book definitely, I think, changed the course of my life in a really big way. And then Sacred Woman is also a really great one if you're looking for something with a little bit more woo. Goddesses Never Age also. That one is a book that I come back to time and time and time again. Actually, of all three of those would actually probably be the one I would recommend reading the most. But just understanding how we're different, it allows you to make more space for things, you know? Even like today, like I'm kind of grumpy and I'm kind of like sad and I don't feel like my normal bubbly, vivacious, happy self. And me 10 years ago would have really been self-critical today, probably. But now I just know what's going on. I know that hormonally I have some things shifting and changing, and so I don't need to make a big deal about it. I can like just get on with my day and understand that I'm going to be a bit more irritable, and that's okay. Right? I think that this also allows us to understand and see the sacredness and the intentionality in our hormonal cycle and in certain different things. I think that it allows there to be a lot more grace and reverence for certain things too, which is really important. Okay, number five. This one, I think, was probably the most important for me to learn. It might not be a lesson that you have had to learn. Like this, I don't think this is something that all women need to learn. I think that some women learn this in childhood through like proper parental role modeling. But it's really, really important if you didn't have a lot of emotional connection or attunement in childhood, which not a lot of us did actually, because our parents, their generation, were so survival focused, right? They wanted to make sure that we had food and shelter and all of these different things. They didn't always have the emotional bandwidth to be present with us in the way that kids need, in the way that children need. And so what happens is it creates this wound of not feeling worthy, right? Not feeling that your presence or your energy or your time or your just like way of being is valuable. So I had this wound where I kind of felt that if I wasn't doing something for somebody, then I wasn't valuable to them, right? So this hugely impacted my relationships especially. I would go into romantic relationships and try to be as valuable as possible by doing, by making their life really easy, by constantly thinking of them, putting them above myself, like really going into that martyr energy. And when I learned how powerful my presence is, right? How like just being there with somebody and not necessarily always having to do and to make things better and fix things, and learning how my presence is valuable, right? Learning how that in itself can be a contribution to somebody. The only way, I will caveat this, the only way that your presence is a contribution to someone, though, is if you are taking very good care of yourself. Like if you are showing up in these spaces or in relationships and you're miserable and you're bitter and you're resentful and you're unhappy, then no, your presence is not a gift. And I'm sorry to tell you that. But if you are taking care of yourself and you're setting boundaries and you love yourself and you're generally in an energy of contentment or peace or happiness, right? Even on the days maybe where you might not be feeling as good, right? I think there's an understanding here that everyone needs to learn is that you don't always need to be doing for other people in order for your presence to mean something and in order for you to be valuable. And I think that for me really allowed me to have the type of relationships that I have now where they're so healthy, right? There's this ability that I have to help people and support people and to do for them, but I'm not driven by this need to be everything for somebody. I'm not driven by this need to mother them or caretake them. It creates more space for a true relationship to blossom. And it creates, I guess, like a more of a personal responsibility too. Like one of the things that I feel the most responsible for in my life now is keeping my energy healthy and clean so that my presence is valuable. That's something that I think about a lot of, like, how do I need to show up for myself so that just being in or around me is nourishing for people? Like, how can that be something that I focus on, you know? Okay, number 6. Again, I don't think everyone has to learn this lesson. I think that this might only apply to some people, but you have to learn how to be selfish sometimes. Some people are just naturally very, I don't want to say selfish, but self-focused, and they put themselves first always. And sometimes those people need to learn how to give and take a little bit, and they need to learn how to prioritize others. And there's a whole different skill set they have to learn. But for me, I really had to learn how to be selfish. I have always found it uncomfortable to prioritize my comfort over somebody else's. And this was probably the biggest thing I've had to learn. I'm still working on it. It really bothers me when a boundary of mine, or like when I have to say no to something that is going to create any type of discomfort for somebody else, whether that's physical discomfort, emotional discomfort, like I am still not that great at saying no, but I have learned this lesson, and I have learned that if I want to be a happy, healthy person, I have to honor my own boundaries, and I have to know how to say no, and I have to value myself enough and love myself enough to have this boundary around what I will and won't do, what I will and won't accept. And something I will say is that boundaries are meant to be fluid. So it doesn't mean that you set a boundary and then you never cross that line or you never step over it. You know, you might have certain boundaries with one person and, you know, there might just be different variations to this. But at the end of the day, you have to know how to say no and you have to know how to prioritize yourself when it is important. And so if you are someone that doesn't know how to be selfish, if you think that that's a dirty word, if you have a very, very hard time prioritizing yourself, it's really important that you learn that. And I would say this is important for all people. Like, that's not a woman thing necessarily. There are a lot of people in the world who do not know how to prioritize themselves, and it creates a lot of pain in their lives. So I would say that's a really, really huge and big one. The next point, we're at number 7. Is that one of the best things you can do for yourself is to find a good therapist, okay? A good therapist is worth everything, anything and everything. Like, there is nothing better, I feel, on your healing journey than to find a therapist or a coach or a mentor that can really hold space for you and can really help you to work through some of these things that I'm talking about today, that can really help you to, you know, come into your own and develop some of the skills that you need to have the life that you want. We are really, truly not meant to do life alone. We're not meant to even do our healing work alone. I know that a lot of people journal and read the self-development books and all of that kind of stuff, but we often need the safety of a trusted person in order to integrate that work. And so if there's one thing that you could invest in, and I wish I had started investing in these things earlier. I don't know, 21, 22-year-old me probably couldn't have afforded a really good therapist. And sometimes the free ones are great. Sometimes they are not. But if that is in your budget, it is definitely worth it, because when you change the inside, your external life changes, right? It's like everyone tries to make themselves happy by changing the external, right? I'll just get a new job. I will just move cities. I will just da-da-da-da-da. But nothing really actually changes if you don't change your own patterns, your own behaviors, if you like don't get out of the habit of being who you've always been, and like the unhealthy version of you that you've always been, because we're all carrying around our own baggage and our own crap. And so if you're not willing to turn and look at that and to do that with somebody that can help you to see things that maybe you can't see, it's going to be very challenging for you to actually create the life that you want and that you desire. So if you have these like big dreams and big goals and big visions for yourself, it's really, really important that you have a team of people around you, you know, a team of support people. I would say, even like adding on to this point, it's also important that you have other people that their job is to take care of you, right? A massage therapist, sorry, guys, I just got like a weird okay. Sorry, I'm back. I got a weird pop-up and it made everything stop. But it's just really important to have a team of people that are, their job is to support you and to take care of you and to help you feel your best. And I think a lot of times, women especially, but I think everyone does this, there can be this tendency to put that on the like someday, you know, at like the bottom of the budget. But if you make sure that you're taken care of, it's much, much easier to do all the things that you need to do in life. It's easier to take care of other people because you're taking care of them from a cup that is full instead of a cup that is empty. And it just makes life much more enjoyable and worth living. Okay, number 8. This one is maybe should have been number 1, but I didn't want to start off with like a lecture. I don't know. But this is like, if I had to circle one, this would be the most important. This would be the thing. It is so important that you have boundaries and self-respect. You have to know who you are in the sense of knowing what is going to make you feel good about yourself and what is going to make you feel bad about yourself, what is going to help you to thrive, what is going to hurt you. And then you have to be able and willing to set boundaries around that. And you have to have enough self-respect to hold true to those boundaries. A lot of women, especially young women, think that if we just give, do, if we just go above and beyond for everybody around us, that will make them love us more. And I also, sometimes people hear this and they swing so far into the opposite where they don't do anything for anyone. And that is not what I'm talking about either. It's really, really important in life to be loving and to be compassionate and to be generous with the things that you can be generous with. It's really important to be an equal partner, an equal parent, a good friend. Like, I am definitely not advocating for not being helpful and not being useful. Like, that's not what I'm saying here. But you have to know what your personal boundaries are. And you have to know, here's how I always know if there's a boundary that needs to be set or something that I need to do different. I am naturally a very generous person. I would say, like, I am more likely to give in a situation than I am to expect to receive most of the time. However, I've had to learn what are the things that I like to receive, what are the things that are important to me to receive from the people in my life, and I've had to learn how to ask for those things without shame or guilt, because in other areas I give very generously. So it's fair. It's okay for me to ask for what I need, and it's okay for me to sit back and receive those things. And I've also had to learn, like, there are some times where I will give with the expectation of receiving, of like, if I do this for you, then you'll love me more. If I do this for you, then you'll never leave me. If I do this for you, then you'll think that I'm the best, most amazing person on the planet. And when that starts to come into my awareness, that's when I know, oh, there's usually a boundary here. I actually maybe don't want to do this thing, or I don't feel happy to do this thing yet. Our relationship maybe hasn't gotten there, or maybe like it's a work thing. Like, you're not paying me enough to do this yet, right? Instead of going, oh, if I go above and beyond and I do all of these things, then they're going to give me a raise or they're going to give me a promotion. Instead, the thing is to go, oh, that's actually out of my scope. I will do that when you start paying me for doing that. It's a very different energy to show up in the world with. And I think that often, I know I always wanted to live in the type of world where people are rewarded for those things, for giving. But the truth is that if you overgive and overdo, people do start to take that for granted. And you also lose, like, everything has to be an equal energy exchange. If you are giving, 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 and never receiving, it's not just harmful for you. It's actually harmful for the other person too, because they don't know what your boundaries are and they don't know what actually feels good for you. And if you're just showing up and doing everything all of the time, people just think that that is what you want to be doing, right? So it's also not fair to go into life with these covert contracts of, I'm going to scratch your back and you scratch mine, unless there's a conversation around it. So learning how to have boundaries, learning how to say no, and developing enough self-respect to have those. And I know the self-respect piece is maybe challenging sometimes. I find it's a lot easier to have self-respect when you're treating yourself with self-respect. So the more often you say no, the more often you create these rules or standards or boundaries that protect you and take care of you and prioritize you, it gets easier. So it's not about waiting to have self-respect and then you'll start setting these boundaries. It's once you start setting the boundaries, the self-respect kicks in. Okay. Number 9 is also very important. And this was one. Okay. So number 9 is like, men are not the enemy. And this was one that was interesting for me because I never necessarily thought that men were the enemy, where I was never that person that was like, men are all trash, they are all awful. But I definitely did have these resentments towards men that were mostly unconscious and that kind of drove my behavior with them. Again, like kind of back to point two or three or whatever it was, I really thought that we were similar and I really didn't want to have to say what I want or communicate what I need or like ask for certain things. I wanted them to just read my mind. I wanted them to show up for me in the way that my girlfriends and my friends and my mom and my sister can naturally show up. But the reason that the women in my life can do a lot of these things is because we are different, right? And so when I learned to understand or to see or to look for all of the ways that the men in my life were showing love that I was missing, because that's what was happening. I had these blinders on where I was so focused on what they weren't doing that I couldn't see what they were doing. And then I also wasn't asking for what I needed, and so I wasn't receiving it because they didn't even know that I needed those things. I was probably very difficult to date in my 20s, I would say, because I think I had this preconceived idea of like, if you loved me, you would show up perfectly. And if you're not showing up perfectly, I'm going to take that personally and think that it means I'm not lovable, instead of understanding that all that is a miscommunication. And what I've learned is that when you tell men, and really this works with all people, but I would say women are a little bit better at intuiting what you need without you having to tell them. And I think that's because of maybe that like mothering instinct that a lot of women, not all women, but that a lot of women have. When I learned how to speak very clearly, very concisely, without pain or drama or all of these things, when I learned to say, hey, this would make me feel loved, or I really need you to do this for me, or to ask for things, my relationships with men got 1,000 times better, and it allowed me to understand them in a way that I just didn't before. So a really good resource for this kind of learning, if you're really stuck on this, I really love Alison Armstrong. Anything by her is great. She has this really amazing course called The Amazing Development of Men, I'm pretty sure. She also has one called Understanding Men and one called Understanding Women, which I found really helpful as well. And then she has a book called The Queen's Code, which was really great. And then if you want a man's perspective, which I find is really helpful, I adore John Wineland and his work. Listening to him, going to his workshops, like just hearing his perspective has really allowed me to love and respect men in a way that was very challenging for me in my 20s, because I just didn't understand them. And it's hard sometimes when you don't understand the way somebody operates to get it, right? So that's number 9. Number 10 kind of goes along with what I just said, but you have to learn how to ask for what you need. And I think that a lot of people don't know how to ask for what they need because it's vulnerable. The moment you start asking someone to show up for you and asking for what you need, it puts you in a vulnerable position because they can say yes or they can say no. And if they say yes, then great. But then you still have some work around actually receiving it. I think sometimes the reason that we want people to read our minds is so that we don't have to be vulnerable. We don't have to say, this is important to me, right? We don't have to really put our heart out there in any way. And there's no chance for rejection because they're just intuiting or just doing it without you having to ask. Where the moment you start asking for what you need, people can say no. And there's a vulnerability in that. There's a fear of rejection in that. There is the chance that you start asking for what you need and you realize that the people around you don't care about you enough to give that to you. And that sucks. And that's painful. Like there's a really big grief process in that. And I think sometimes we avoid asking for things because we don't want to confront that. And we don't want to confront that what if of like, what if they don't want to give that to me? What if they don't care enough about me to take this need seriously? What if my needs and wants and desires aren't important to them, right? Those are all very, very scary thoughts that I think we often don't want to face. So instead of asking for what we need, we just get pissed that they just don't know and that they can't read your mind. And so learning how to be vulnerable is very important. And I think one of the ways that you can learn how to be vulnerable is in knowing that you'll be okay either way. Something that I have developed, and this has allowed me to be vulnerable, but to also be detached, detached from the outcome, in the sense of, like, I really firmly believe it's always this or something better. So if I ask this person in front of me, like, can you please do this for me? This is important to me. This would make me feel loved. This would make me feel cared for. And they brush it off and they don't give a fuck. And they basically look at me like I'm an alien with two heads. I now know that that is not the person for me, right? And I think something that has always helped me is that understanding of, okay, say this person in front of me that I now realize doesn't care enough to want to help me, say I really, really love them. The thing that allows me to be able to detach from that and go, this person is not for me, is understanding, man, if I can love this person so deeply, imagine how deeply I'm going to love somebody who is all of these things, but also able to show up for me and also willing to be an equal partner. Like, imagine how deep that love is going to be. So having that mindset of, if it's not this, it's something better, is really helpful. If you can do that in a healthy way, not in an avoidant, shutdown, fuck you then kind of energy, because that's not what I'm talking about either. But learning how to ask for what you need, learning how to be vulnerable, learning how to handle rejection. Like, you are going to ask for things sometimes and you are going to be rejected sometimes. It also doesn't mean that the person in front of you has to always give you what you're asking for. That's not fair either. You have to learn how to handle the disappointment sometimes when people who love you don't have the capacity to give you things sometimes. Like, there's an element of emotional maturity that is required with that too. But learning how to ask for what you need is the only way you get it. And if you don't speak up and you don't ask for it and you don't share, it's very, very unlikely that you will get that thing, whether you're wanting a promotion or a relationship or whatever it is. If you want something, you have to speak up, and you have to be willing to deal with the consequences of speaking up as well. And that's where I think therapy, learning how to regulate, learning how to love yourself, all of those things, super, super important. Okay, we have three left. Let's see, where are we at for time? Okay, we're doing okay. So this was a really big lesson for me, and I think a lot of people can relate to this. This is not necessarily a woman-specific thing by any means, but I really had to learn that softness is strength. I am a naturally very soft person, as most of you know and can tell. I'm naturally very sensitive, very empathetic. There are things that bother me that don't bother other people. There are things that will make me feel emotional, whether that's like happy emotional or sad emotional or angry emotional, that other people don't necessarily care about. Like, I am a deep, deep feeler. And I'm also very soft, in the sense of, like, I really want everyone to be happy and good and taken care of. You know, there's this passiveness almost sometimes. I'm not and never will be the type of person that asserts myself at the expense of other people, right? I've had to learn how to balance my needs and other people's needs. And so learning to see my softness and my sensitivity as the strength that it is has been huge. I have learned that the impact that I have on people because of that softness, I really get to see a side of people that very few people see. I think that my softness brings out a softness in other people. I get to see people's more vulnerable side because they're not worried that I'm going to attack them or that I'm going to shun them. There isn't like, I'm not walking around with like a sword and dagger at my back, you know? And I've had to learn to see that as a strength, because really, if you think about it, we live in a very unsafe world. And the fact that I feel safe enough in myself to not be incredibly guarded and self-protective, I think that that shows a strength. I think that that shows an inner strength that is really valuable. And so learning to see whatever it is that you think is a weakness, when you can flip that and start to see it as a strength, I think that makes a huge difference. But especially for those of you that are softer, we live in a world that doesn't necessarily value that softness. But I feel like all of the best things in my life have come from that softness. I have really great relationships. I have a really great connection to myself and to spirit. I feel like I am like the most at home when I'm in nature or like around children, or like, you know, it's kind of like Disney princess vibes in a sense. And all of that is because I'm soft. It's because I'm tender. It's because I walk around in a very vulnerable kind of way. So I'm allowed to have able to have a deeper experience of life. It also means that my feelings get hurt more. I feel more deeply, you know, but I live a very passionate and vibrant life because of that softness. So I definitely see it as probably my top strength is my softness. So that was a really, really big lesson for me. Number 12, this is huge again for everybody, but the people you choose to have around you is half of the battle of your happiness. You can do all of the things. You can do the red light therapy and, you know, get sunlight and eat a, you know, proper diet and work out and, you know, do all the things that we're supposed to do for the science of happiness, the science of joy, the science of regulation. But if the people around you are absolute shitheads, you're just not going to feel good. You know, if you are constantly fighting with your boss and then you come home and you're constantly fighting with your partner and then, you know, you don't have good friendships and you don't have boundaries with your family, like if you are constantly being met with challenge from the people in your life, if there isn't a safe place for you to land, if there isn't an area or a person that you can show up and be fully vulnerable and yourself and authentic with, if you don't have laughter and play and joy and all of these things, like it doesn't really matter all of those other things that you have or that you're doing correctly or properly. And I think that a lot of times people focus on those things. They focus so much on the minutiae without understanding that the people around you have the biggest impact on everything, not even just your happiness, but your success too. Like research is really starting to show that the biggest decision you make for your success is not the career you choose or, you know, any of those things that we would think. It's actually the partner you choose. It's who you choose to spend your life with. Are you choosing someone who makes you feel like you can do anything? Are you choosing someone that's a true teammate who shows up for you, who's an equal partner? Are you choosing somebody who loves you? Like, that's a big one. Are you choosing someone who likes you, who respects you, who you have a friendship with? Like, that is super freaking important. And a lot of people overlook that. A lot of people, I think, kind of go, well, we've got enough of the same values or we've got enough similarities that we can make this work. But if there isn't something deeper than that, it's going to be very hard to sustain that relationship. And I think that's true in friendships too. Like if your friends are constantly talking poorly about you, or it's become part of your, just the way your social circle operates to constantly be gossiping or like not supporting each other or whatever, that's going to have a really big impact. So the number one thing that you can do for your happiness is to choose wisely. And that might mean that you have to go through periods where you don't have a lot of people around you. But I really think that that's just the universe getting you kind of reoriented so that the correct people can come in. And the correct people are going to love you for who you are. They're not going to judge you for everything that you do. They're going to want the best for you. They're going to be supportive. They're going to be healthy, right? And this can be a tough one because sometimes it means letting go of certain relationships or people because they're just not a good match for you, you know, or they're not healthy people or whatever. But I think it's really, really important to be mindful of who you're spending time with. Okay. And then the last one is also very cheesy. Some of these, as I was writing them down, I'm like, oh my God. But I think it's also important. We live in this era right now where women are really coming into our own in the sense of we're doing a lot of the things I talked about in this episode, setting boundaries, saying no, we're making six figures, we're running our own lives, we're really like bosses in our own right. And sometimes I think that that can swing so far into this detached, cool girl, kind of bitchy, sassy, self-protective, sometimes selfish energy. And something that has always worked for me and been very important. This wasn't necessarily, I guess, a lesson I had to learn, but what I had to learn was to trust this. Trust this in myself and not try to be different. But kindness is so important and it will get you everywhere. Kindness might not always be rewarded in the short term. I will say that. There are going to be situations in your life where taking the higher road, being the kinder person, being the bigger person, feels like it shoots you in the foot. Like I'm not going to lie about that. But over the long term, it helps you because it creates trust with the people around you. It creates trust with yourself where you have, I think of this as like integrity. When you are able to be kind, regardless of circumstance, kind does not mean being a doormat. Kind does not mean being a pushover. Kind does not mean letting people treat you like shit. But if you are able to be kind, even when it's hard, I think that that shows a certain level of integrity. It shows character, and character cannot be faked. I actually always look for kindness in the people that I want to have in my life because I think that it's easy to be nice when everything's going well. It's easy to be helpful when that's easy or it supports you. But kindness is something deeper. Kindness comes from character. Kindness comes from a willingness to be that way because that's something that you value. It's a sign of a strong character and strong integrity. And so something that I have discovered as I have gotten older is that although it might not always help you in the short term, there's a boomerang effect. And I don't think it's necessarily karma or things like that. I think that it's just everything evens out in the end. And my kindness has always been rewarded. There has never been a situation, there's no situation I look back in my life where I regret being kind to the extent that I could be in that moment. And I'm very, very thankful because I feel like this thing, this ability to be kind was, I don't know, I want to say like the world tried to beat it out of me, right? There's a lot of messaging that we get around you have to look out for number one and you have to be yourself. And if you're too kind, people will walk all over you, all of those different things. And that is true. If kindness is not matched also with self-respect and boundaries, then those things are definitely true. But you can be kind and also take care of yourself. You can be kind and also have really strong boundaries. You don't have to choose between being compassionate and being self-respecting. And I'm very, very thankful that kindness is a value that was really instilled in me from a young age. Because, you know, when we talk about, you know, when people ask me, like, what is the secret to, you know, these certain things that I've created in my life, I think a lot of it comes back to kindness, if we're being honest. A lot of it, like, kindness has just gotten me everywhere. It's gotten me in a lot of doors that I maybe, or in a lot of places or rooms that I maybe had no business being in. But if people like you, if they trust you, if they think that you're a good person, there are opportunities that will come to you because people want to be around you, you know? Okay, so those are my 13 things I wish I had known at 21. Thank you guys for listening if you made it all the way through. Happy International Women's Day. I hope that you are, you know, doing something for yourself, taking care of yourself, supporting yourself, loving yourself, all of those different things, and maybe even celebrating with some other people that you love dearly. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to leave a review, I would love that. It would make me very happy. And we will chat soon. See you next week. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of our community. If you want to help us to grow, you can share this episode on your Instagram, share it with your friends. If you do that and you tag us so I can see it, I would love it. I get so happy every time I hear about how the podcast is impacting you. Really, that's the only thing that keeps me going and keeps me creating with the podcast, because it is so much work sometimes, but I just love hearing from you. And if there's any guests that you want me to have on the podcast, any topics you want me to cover, just reach out to me, send me a DM, and we will add it into the content list. Hope you guys have a great week. Bye, everyone. Mm-hmm.